From the City of Angels near the Pacific Ocean, good morning, good evening, wherever you may be across the nation, around the world. I'm George Norrie. Welcome to Coast AM. Later on tonight, the big picture as we look at the cosmos. Here's what's happening. House Republicans have unveiled a $622 million measure to battle the Zika virus, offering President Barack Obama just one-third of the money he requested almost 3 months ago. The measure by Kentucky Republican Harold Rogers is scheduled to go for a vote later this week. Now, the legislation provides funding for developing a vaccine, controlling the mosquitoes that spread Zika, tests to detect the virus, and international mosquito control. Zika can cause severe birth defects. If you've been traveling lately, you know how difficult it is to get through the TSA screening. What a mess. 4,000 people over the weekend missed their flights because the TSA just couldn't get them through in time. In Chicago, for example, it was a disaster. A lot of people had to sleep at the O'Hare Airport. Let's check in with Howard Bloom, the expert on life. Howard, that's got to be frustrating for people.
It's crazy because transportation is the lifeline of an economy. So let's look at the picture. You gave a few good examples, but in just one recent week, nearly 7,000 passengers of just one airline, American, missed their flights because of security line waits of up to 2 hours in airports. And because of a computer glitch, you heard about this one in Phoenix, 3,000 pieces of luggage from just one airport had to be trucked from Phoenix to LA, Las Vegas, and San Diego to be screened. And this is ridiculous. So you wonder who in the world is to blame. And the answer is much simpler than it looks. It's Congress. It's Mitch McConnell, John Boehner, and Paul Ryan who run the place. According to TSA spokeswoman Lori Dankers, here's her quote, Congress has capped the number of uniformed screeners for budgetary reasons. In other words, jeez, Congress has cut the number of screeners from 50,000 to 42,000. That's a cut of 15%. Meanwhile, the number of passengers has risen 100 million by 15%. And so staff has been cut by 15%. The number of people showing up at airports has increased by 15%. On what planet is it sane to reduce supply by 15% when there's a 15% increase in demand?
It doesn't happen. Howard, thank you. And you're so right. Look, I was traveling through Denver over the weekend as we taped our Beyond Belief television programs, and I had TSA pre-screen on my boarding pass, thank God. Because that means you don't have to take your shoes off or take liquids out of your suitcase, and on I went. But I got to tell you, the airport was backed up. April was the seventh month in a row that broke global temperature records, according to NASA. Last month smashed the previous record for April by the largest margin ever. Space scientists want to put humans to sleep for up to 2 weeks at a time as they journey through the solar system. So they're planning to come up with $500,000 to develop a hibernation chamber, which will put these humans to sleep. It's a little like sci-fi, isn't it? They're working with an American firm called SpaceWorks to turn fiction into reality. A diabetic woman loses her teeth, hair, and ditching insulin just to lose weight caused all that to happen. Oh, yeah, she lost weight, 60 pounds over 6 months, but her teeth and hair went because of that. Let's check in with Christian Wild. That's a serious thing to do, Christian.
It's a very sad story, George. You know, we as a population are most familiar with eating disorders like bulimia and anorexia, but probably very few of us have ever heard of diabulimia. I've never have. Had you heard about it before
nope,
today?
I have not, but that's what it is.
Yeah,
when,
it's
when
associated
you do that.
With insulin-dependent patients who withhold or manipulate their insulin, mainly, as in this case, just to lose weight. We, as a public, didn't understand anorexia until we began hearing how it had been impacting the life in the eventual death of Karen Carpenter. Diabulimia is another disorder new to our lexicon. Now, this young lady you're talking about has been suffering with juvenile diabetes since she was a child. And just a side note, George, but it must be very frustrating for any of these children who grow up with juvenile diabetes. They have a lifetime of having to deny themselves snacks like ice cream, other treats their schoolmates are enjoying every day, and their families, but they cannot indulge. must take a lifetime of discipline. But what a price this lady paid, feeling she had to lose those extra pounds by foregoing her insulin. The entire article with the pictures is at the top of my website tonight if you want to read it.
At my heart book, doctor.
George,
go
before
ahead.
You go. Before 1921, when they discovered insulin, any child born with diabetes, juvenile diabetes, did not survive.
Well, that we're doing a great job with that now. Christian's website, myheartbook.com. And you got to look at this picture at coasttocoastam.com. A woman bitten on the arm by a shark during a swim in Florida showed up at the hospital with the shark still attached to her arm. The 23-year-old woman in stable condition at a hospital. Unbelievable. The shark had died, but it was stuck in her arm. Up next, we are going to be talking with Lisa Gibbons. That's right. Her latest work is called Fierce Optimism. She's a New York Times best-selling author, but she's also an award-winning television personality and, of course, won NBC Celebrity Apprentice. As a matter of fact, it was in the seventh season. Listen in.
Lisa, you led with kindness. I don't see these people in New York. I see brutal, brutal killers. I don't meet people like you. Maybe you'll be with all of our friends over at the Today Show one of these days. I think you do so well. You really do have tremendous talent and tremendous leadership ability. You also raised a tremendous amount of money. You won the last task, which does mean something to me, and I'm ready to make my decision. The winner of The Celebrity Apprentice is Lisa Gibbons.
There you have it. She became the second woman ever to earn the title. The first was the late Joan Rivers. In a moment, Lisa Gibbons joins us on Coast to Coast AM. And welcome back to Coast, George Norrie with you, and we've got a great guest for you for the rest of the hour, Lisa Gibbons, an Emmy Award-winning television personality, very successful businesswoman, social entrepreneur, author, hosted Entertainment Tonight. Her daytime talk show was Lisa, the PBS news show by My Generation, the TV news magazine, America Now. Wow, plus best-selling author, Take Two, her first book, and then another one, of course, which we're talking about tonight, Fierce Optimism. And I just mentioned she won the NBC Celebrity Apprentice. That was Donald Trump you heard talking to her when I played that little clip. Welcome to Coast, Lisa Gibbons. Lisa, what a career you've got.
You know what? I've been very lucky, and I've worked really hard. I think that there's no magic bullet, right? I think it's resilience and perseverance and a little fierce optimism, right?
I was going to say, you use these techniques, fierce optimism, to win Celebrity Apprentice.
Well, you know, it's a very difficult environment. That boardroom setting, Trump is intimidating, we know that much. And there's a bunch of celebrities that are hardwired for drama. And for me, you know, I was brought up to be a nice girl by my Southern parents in South Carolina, you know, kind of wait your turn and yes, ma'am, and no, sir, and raise your hand and all of that. But when you're nice, that doesn't mean that you're a pushover. And so at the end of the season is when I really started thinking, wow, is it really that much of a headline that nice girls, nice guys can finish first? And so I started really looking at what that means. What is it, you know, what does it mean to be nice? And I think we just need to rehab the word because it's kind of an icky four-letter word that nobody wants.
No, you're right about that. You know, we've watched your career soar over the years, Lisa, and really, congratulations on everything you've done. But this book, Fierce Optimism, is a great read for anybody who just wants to change their life a little bit.
You know, thank you. That's very kind of you. I've discovered that when I really did a little rewind on what has been the thing that has sustained me and others over 30, 40 years of a career, and the driver of those core values, you know, it's loyalty and it's forgiveness and it's focus and resilience and all those things. But I think optimism is it's an emotional competence. It's a mental style. And it just allows you to be more resilient and more focused. Because when you are having optimistic thoughts, you're basically igniting the part of your brain that is focused on problem solving. So it's opening up the neural pathways that are connected to problem solving. So it's really a strategy that's incredibly effective. And I think people are dismissive because they think, oh, it's pie in the sky, it's Pollyanna. It's not about looking at the glass being half full or not. I think it's about, you have to say, okay, I own that glass. I own it. So it's up to me to keep it filled up. And if you adopt a worldview that is tied to your ability to rebound and recover, you know, to bounce back, to fight back from all the things that happened to all of us along the way, that's a great winning formula to tie you to successes.
Good point. Now, I've got to ask you, Lisa, about Donald Trump. What did you think of him, not only on the show, but as a person?
Well, you know, my experience with him was on Celebrity Apprentice, of course, and I'd interviewed him, I think, maybe a couple of times before that for ET. So it's not like I really know him. It's a contrived environment. But my challenge was, okay, I mean, and politically, that's a different story. I mean, I'm not a political pundit, but Trump and I don't share a lot of political views. But the access points for me were looking at what do we have in common? Family, and he values loyalty, mm-hmm. so do I. And so I think that whether it's being on a reality show, in the boardroom, negotiating with your kids, whatever it is that we're trying to accomplish, that if you focus on, it's up to you to kind of have the optics of how do I see this? What am I going to do to show up and be me? So I saw Donald Trump as being a paternal figure. And he really is. You know, he had his children, Ivanka and Don Jr. and Eric, as advisors on the show, and they've been so out front with his campaign. They have incredible work ethic, those kids. And they are respectful and deferential to their dad, but they're not their dad. They have their own space. And he, you know, didn't give them anything. I remember being so impressed with Ivanka. I always wished Ivanka would run for something. I think she's so phenomenal.
She just might.
Oh, my gosh. She's full on my girl crush. But I always looked at her joining the board of a publicly traded company. I think she was in her mid-20s. And that, sure, the Trump name obviously has opened doors for them, but it's also been the kind of burdensome thing that is, I'm sure, shut doors to and made it more difficult for them. And this young woman, just as did the other kids, just has incredible strength. I think that's what people are drawn to in the election. You know, we're living in uncertain times. We're worried about our safety. You know, we're worried about the economy. It's a tense time. And in times like that, we want to feel like those who are in charge, you've got this, right? You've got our back. And I believe with all the candidates, that's what people are responding to. That and what people perceive as authenticity. And, you know, every individual has their own criteria for determining what that means.
Well, he must have read your book, Fierce Optimism, because he's changing a little bit over the last month or so that I've seen him in his campaign.
Well, you know, in the early days of the campaign, remember when everyone couldn't believe it and people were just stunned with, you know, the boldness and the brashness
exactly.
of how he was running. And the campaign strategists, I think, were kind of, you know, trying to figure out, you know, there was no controlling. He was definitely just on this aggressive path. And there was a sign at the front of one of the rooms where the strategist managed his career that said simply, as I believe it did back in Reagan's administration too, let Trump be Trump. Well, I think that there's a great lesson for all of us in that we all are in our best position to win when we can show up exactly as who we are. And so as the campaign gets deeper, you know, I think it's interesting to watch everybody pivot. And it's, it's been emotional whiplash, I think, for the pundits trying to keep up.
It sure has been. Lisa, what is the main message you'd like people to get when they read Fierce Optimism?
You know, I believe that you really can win playing by your rules, your way, if you know what you're willing to do and not do to get there. And so I hope that people will begin to ask themselves those defining questions, you know, and know that at any point you get to hit the reset button and start over. So if as a parent, if in your relationships, if in your business, you have been cynical or negative, anytime, you know, you can grow your optimism. It's not like you're born with a DNA chip that says, great, you're a positive thinker. And it's not that optimists don't have any sucky days or negative thoughts. It's that optimists very quickly get back to that question of, okay, that happened, now what? And they focus on the now, what do you do? And I think that that's what Trump was talking about, winning Celebrity Apprentice. You know, in my business, I have not had a need to sabotage other people on the way up. You know, I mean, throwing people under the bus to get a better place in line might work temporarily, but I think that is always overshadowed by creating really long-lasting success, by staying true to your word, and seeing it as success unshared is failure. So for me, I mean, I hope that people will read it and see their own values as being very meaningful and the greatest touchstones to serve you well when you're looking at how to grow your business, how to grow your courage, how to reintroduce yourself as a different kind of parent to your children, which is your option at any time, and just getting next to the idea that clicking into your empathy and other core values that I think you look at, like Bill Gates, you look at Warren Buffett, these are self-described optimists. So what do they know? What do optimists know? I think it's the mental style that just gives you an advantage.
Can you be a nice person and succeed at business?
Yeah, I mean, you definitely can. Look at so many people. You know, I love to get inspired by, you know, success leaves clues. And when you examine people who have built either companies that are worth a lot or who have become major influencers in their fields of thought, there are lots of people that have done it by being nice. But that doesn't mean that you don't have boundaries. And I think that that's where we get tripped up on this nice guy business. You know, if you could be as competitive as all get out, you can and should want to win. But that doesn't mean that you have to do it in a way that's not civil. And if you have boundaries around yourself, because I always say that boundaries are self-love. And when we treat ourselves better by learning who to let in and who to edit out of our lives, the rest of the world kind of gets the memo. And I think if you attach yourself to career complainers, then you're going to get sucked up in this vortex of drama. And those people are everywhere. I always say don't, you know, we get what we focus on. We know that's a physics thing, right? So don't focus on what I call the crap. And the acronym is criticism, resistance, antagonism, and pressure. That's in every business, in everybody's life. The more you focus on it, the more you're going to get. So just kind of go, okay, great, that's there. Now what?
When you were doing Entertainment Tonight, did you ever work with a Jim Van Messel?
Oh, my gosh, yes, I did.
I did, too. It was my first television job in Detroit. He was my executive producer.
How'd that go?
Now, that is a small world. Great. I learned a lot from him. Look at me now.
I mean, truly.
I mean, he was a good guy. He helped develop that show.
You know, I think when you, isn't it funny how the world is so small?
It really is.
Truly, that's just kind of crazy.
I even think I met you, I'm sure I did, at one of our Christmas parties for the radio network years ago.
That makes sense.
Yep.
That would make sense. Well, you know, I'm a big fan of yours. I love what you do and how you do it. And don't you think you have the coolest job?
It is fantastic.
But see, when you look at you, you know, you probably got a lot of gratitude for what you've created and the people that have helped you.
Many of the techniques and the ideas in Fierce Optimism, I have lived my life doing. Not
Amen.
Knowing what I was doing, but when I looked at all your chapters and what you did, many of the things that I have done, I've done that in my life.
That's why I wanted to write the book, because it's like I say, success does leave clues. And for people like you that have gratitude, you know, gratitude is the foundation for abundance, and it's a natural byproduct of optimism.
Really. Lisa, hold on for a sec. We're going to take this quick break and come back with our final segment. We're talking with Lisa Gibbons, of course, and we're going to open up the phone lines, too. So time permitting, in this last half hour, we'll take your phone calls with her on Coast to Coast AM. We are talking with Lisa Gibbons about her latest work called Fierce Optimism. You can get full details at coasttocoastam.com. Hey, by the way, a couple events for me coming up. June 18th, a live stage show in St. Louis. You are going to love the program. So if you haven't picked up your tickets yet, come on by, and come on by as soon as you can because they're going fast. Go to coasttocoastam.com. You'll see them at the highlight reel, and also at coasttocoastam.com, Asheville, North Carolina, a live stage show there. We're going to be talking about the paranormal all night long. You can get the link at coasttocoastam.com. Okay, welcome back to Coast to Coast, back with Lisa Gibbons. We're going to take your calls as well as we talk about her work, Fierce Optimism. You look like you have fun writing books, Lisa.
You know, I got to tell you, the way that I write books is I go on long walks and I dictate my thoughts into the voice recorder of my phone. Thank hallelujah for our iPhones. And that's, you know, we all have different ways of getting to the finish line. And that's been my way of kind of breaking this down into bite-sized nuggets. But yeah, I do. It's, you know, they say that you teach what you need to learn, and I think you write what you need to explore. And so, at this point, really looking at optimism and looking at how, you know, it's really a major player, I think, at the power table. And not only that, but it, you know, it fuels the bottom line in business. It allows you to feel better about your relationships and your family. So, yeah, I was very seduced by kind of getting under the hood and examining all that.
Great technique. Rod Serling, when he wrote the Twilight Zone episodes, would float in his Los Angeles pool with a dictaphone. They didn't have smartphones then. And he would dictate all his scripts for Twilight Zone. Same way.
No kidding.
Yeah. Unbelievable. I mean, that's wow. That's a way to get the creative juices flowing, I guess.
That's the way to do it. And, you know, it's funny because I think there are a lot of people that that, you know, talk about, oh, all you people say about follow your passion and how do I find my passion. I think we get stuck on, you know, you've got to go out and test drive your dreams sometimes. You know, you grow up thinking, oh, you want that hot convertible, you want that hot boyfriend, that dream job, whatever it is. Then you got it and it was kind of empty and you figure, well, that's not it. So I'm just always encouraging people to, you know, go out around the track a few times with some new dreams. You know, change those things. When you change the energy in your life, everything kind of shifts into focus. And sometimes it's a very simple pivot.
Lisa, what does someone do who's the nice person, who's the honorable person, and they have to deal at a company, in business, in life, with somebody who's pretty cutthroat or conniving or very, very difficult and underhanded? How do you get around that?
Well, you know, if you don't pull out your sword and fence with those people, that energy will usually atrophy and die because people like that thrive on sucking up all the oxygen, right?
That's right.
That's how they become who they are.
Psychic vampires.
Yes, exactly right. And so, you know, I go back to very simple advice that I got from my mom about, you know, put your blinders on, run your race, and don't be distracted by what the other horses are doing. So I use that a lot in Celebrity Apprentice when, you know, there's all kinds of dramas and meltdowns and, you know, that's just a real prime environment for that kind of behavior. But for me, it was easy just to kind of put my head down. And I believe if you allow other people to strengthen their strengths while you're strengthening yours, that then it's kind of disarming for people. There's always the devil's advocate folks, you know, who are telling you why your way isn't smart and why, you know, you've got to toughen up and all that. But highly effective leaders usually are the ones who aren't afraid to show their employees and their teams that they're vulnerable. They're not my way or the highway kind of people. They're not those bullies at the pulpit, you mm-hmm. know, creating fear. They're the ones that want to build loyalty. And in order to get loyalty, you need to show that you're vulnerable because, you know, that's going to make people trust you, and then they're going to be loyal to you and your company.
I thought Geraldo Rivera, whom I also admire, just took everything with class during that episode.
Geraldo is, you know, and that's an interesting, I really give props to Geraldo because here's what he did. He showed up as himself and never backed down from it.
That's right.
Like how Trump does, right? I believe on one of the first days of production, you know, Geraldo comes in and is like, I'm Geraldo, deal with it. And I thought that was so classic. But when I had to be and got to be his project manager, everybody had sort of created this epic lore about how impossible Geraldo was. Well, no, Geraldo, like most people, wanted to be heard. And he really is so powerful in his own life that he likes to kind of get to the stage first and empty out. And once you've heard his ideas and he's on the record, then he's really open to if anybody else has a better idea. But we all just want to have our ideas validated because we're all trying to be significant in our own lives. And if you let other people be significant, they're incredibly cooperative, I think.
So if Donald Trump gets elected as president and calls you up one day and says, Ms. Gibbons, I'd like you to be the ambassador to Belize or someplace, would you take it?
Can you imagine I'm like jockeying now for some ambassadorship? We're a long way from that general election right now. That's what I'm going to say about that. I think that so many people have tried to prognosticate where this thing is going, and everybody's been proven wrong. So it's kind of a great lesson in staying in the moment, which I think was in Trump's book in 1987. I read The Art of the Deal, and he said, as many other people before and after him have said in various ways, that the best way to prepare for the next moment is to be totally present in this one. And a lot of his business style, reading about it in that book, about being very flexible and not being tied to either agendas or particular ways of doing things, really resonated with me. And if, you know, in the very few ways that he and I are alike, I try to do that same thing, too.
Let's take some calls in the 10 minutes we have left with you, Lisa. And they're calling from all over the place. Let's pick it up by going to Joe in the Bronx. Hey, Joe, welcome to the program.
How you doing, George?
Great.
I'm glad you have Lisa Gibbons on your show.
Me too.
I've admired her throughout her career. I wanted to ask Ms. Gibbons if there's any special formula for success that I can incorporate into my life. When my mother was on her deathbed, I promised her I would be a success.
Joe, first of all, isn't it interesting how that's a soul promise? How recently did you lose your mom?
This was in 2009, Lisa.
Okay. Oh, and my mother died in 2008, and I made a promise to her, too. I promised her that I would tell our family story of our struggle with Alzheimer's disease. So you promised that you would be a success. How do you define success?
Well, you know, I mean, there's many ways to define success, and I want to be a success monetarily, and I also want to give something to the world, and I'm a songwriter.
You're a songwriter.
Right.
No, he's good, too, Lise. He's good.
Wow. So that is your gift to the world, right? And when you are resonating at your highest vibrational level with your talent, that's when you're giving the most and when you're happy, and that, of course, is the path to the success. Have you found that there's been the same kind of obstacle in your way along your journey to getting where you want to be?
Yes, and part of it is financial, and part of it is overcoming criticism that I've received throughout. I don't have that kind of support that I wish I did have.
Well, that's when you know that if people don't get you and they don't get and they can't encourage you, you know, you're going to have to, like, let them off at the next floor. Because, being, you know, they say we're like the most five people that we hang around with. We become most like them. And so for somebody like you, if you want to rise to the top and be the cream at the top, you're automatically self-selecting to be apart from all those other people that don't get you. So very cautious editing and deliberate editing of getting those people out of your life, because they're probably distracting you and they're not helping you. I think that do you find that there's somebody that has what you want? Have you studied their success? Do you look at how they got there? Is there a pace setter for you in your life?
You mean professionals, musicians, and songwriters?
Yeah.
Stevie Wonder is one of them. Let's see.
Well, you shoot high there.
I'm sorry?
You shoot high. Stevie Wonder's one of the best.
Yeah, he is. You know, I've admired him throughout his career. Also, the Beatles. Basically, they influenced me early on.
You know, there's no secret formula. There's just habits. How do you get from, no whining to winning? And the habits are, however small the steps are, every day doing the thing, the one thing, the five things, whatever, that's going to get you closer there. And if that one thing starts with what George and I were talking about earlier, changing the energy in your life, there's probably some move that you could or should do that's going to shift how everything else happens for you. So it's like, if you want what you've never had, you have to do what you've never done. So if I were you, I would really take some time looking at what you've never done and do that thing, whether it's a person that you want to mentor or shadow or, I had pace setters that I never, when I was a kid in South Carolina, Olivia Newton-John and Dick Clark were my pace setters. I had no idea someday I would grow up and work with them and get to be friends with them. It didn't even occur to me. But I studied what they did. And, whoever's got what you want, look at how they got it. But I would start with changing some energy and seeing if you can just pivot in a different direction.
Good luck, Joe. Take the advice. And the book, of course, is called Fierce Optimism. Lisa, when Governor Schwarzenegger appointed you to the stem cell agency, I have done so many shows on the wonders of stem cell therapy for people who have, we've had people injected with their own stem cells who could not walk 3 feet because they had 5 heart attacks, and they were walking for miles after that. It's an amazing medical technique.
It really is. The adult stem cells and the embryonic stem cells, the applications of which we're really in such the infancy stages of. And I've so admired when Schwarzenegger began to focus in this direction, because California has kind of become this mecca for stem cell science and for collaborating with other people and encouraging them to share their data and getting the brightest and the best to come together. And for someone like me that has a family history of Alzheimer's disease, the brain has been such a conundrum at trying to figure out the applications for stem cells. But, there's the hippocampus, which houses memory. There's been talk about and studies done to look at, can you inject stem cells into the hippocampus? So I'm very positive that we're gonna get there, perhaps through stem cell science. But, boy, I really think this gray tsunami has so bankrupt us, not only with our healthcare system and Medicare and all the rest, but spiritually and emotionally. It's just, it's a very cruel disease.
Let's go to our Skype caller, Steve, in Spokane, Washington. Steve, welcome to the show. You're on with Lisa Gibbons. Go ahead.
Thank you very much for having me on.
You're welcome. Thank you.
Lisa. I have a question for you. I'm a kind of a shy person, and I don't have a lot of confidence in myself. And a lot of times I get intimidated when I'm talking to people. And what advice could you give
me? Well, good. A great question. What advice, Lisa, to the guy who gets intimidated?
I think that all of us have a portion of ourselves where we feel shy. And the people that appear as the most extroverted, super confident, also have those moments where they question, am I okay and am I doing it right and are they liking me and all those other kinds of things. I think back to when I was in grade school and I was a cheerleader, and I really wanted to be the head cheerleader, but we had secret ballot voting, and We were putting the names that we wrote down in a little hat to pull out and see who was going to be the head cheerleader. And as I wrote down another girl's name, I thought, oh my gosh, what if it comes down to one vote? And you know what? It always comes down to one vote. So if you can kind of think about ways to vote for yourself, since this is a political year, everybody's talking about owning the future and all that, but you first have to claim the present, right? And look at, how do I vote for me, and what do I really have to offer? And so have you ever written like your mission statement for your life, or how you want people to perceive you? Have you ever kind of done those sorts of exercises?
Wow, he's breaking up a little bit on Skype, Lisa, but I think the mere fact that he even called you shows that he is not that shy.
You know, and that's the thing. We're only proud of ourselves when we do something that we know is hard for us. And whenever you're trying to change something, whether it's to be less shy, to make more money, to lose 10 pounds, you have to expect pushback, because that's the law of the universe, you know? So you have to know that you're going to get that pushback, and that means that you're on the right direction. So it's really just a case of getting comfortable with those, what they used to say, getting your butterflies to fly in formation when you're feeling that way.
Let's go to our final caller, John in Ontario, Canada. Hey, John, go ahead.
I'm here.
Yes, you are. Go
yes.
for it.
Okay, Lisa Gibbons, George Norrie, you made a comment with regards to, you know, salespeople being... snake oil salesmen and such. What I'm here to tell you is that that doesn't respond to all salesmen.
No, I don't think she said that. She didn't say that.
I don't think we were talking about that at all.
No, we didn't say that. What we did talk about was the person who is cutthroat in, you know, will do anything to succeed in business, those kinds, but not everybody. Of course not. Not everybody.
Well, you know, I don't know if you're a salesperson or not, which I'm sorry if anybody else misunderstood us, but if I think in sales, they say that the three most powerful words are, I don't know. And that always really struck me, because when we can admit that we don't know something, that's when people say, wow, you're not trying to scam me, or be, as your words, a snake oil salesman.
I've met a few snake oil salesmen in my life, though. I sure have.
Yep.
They're out there.
And that's not confidence. That's fear. You think, are those people super confident? I think they're afraid of what will happen if they aren't that way. So, I'm sorry that he misunderstood us.
That's right.
I think that in sales, in business, in anything, people, your customers, your clients, your coworkers, they want to know that you understand them. And that kind of brings in what we were talking about earlier, George, with empathy.
Exactly.
I really think that empathy is the new golden rule. I do. I think that it's been a consistent source of strength for me. When you look for what can I give to someone else right now that will be helpful to them before I look for what I need, typically that's going to bring you exactly to the place where you want to be.
The name of the book, Fierce Optimism. It's out there right now. Came out in mid-April. So go for it, folks. Lisa, thanks for being on the program. Really appreciate it.
I appreciate it. Thank you so much. Thanks to everybody who called in.
How neat. Lisa Gibbons. Now, we're going to come back in just a moment on Coast to Coast AM with Sean Carroll. We're going to be talking with a theoretical physicist. He's on for 3 hours tonight. We'll take a lot of your calls throughout the night as we talk about his work, The Big Picture. I love this. On the origins of life, meaning, and the universe itself. So get ready for some science and spirituality.